Welcome to the Small Business Show. Join us as we have candid conversations with entrepreneurs and experts in the industries to uncover the wisdom and strategies for running a successful business. The Small Business Show is the official podcast of Garuda Promo and Branding Solutions. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Swai. You can also call me the promo guy. Today, we have Marcy Rai. She's the founder of Y Media, an award-winning creative agency that provides content, design, and technology services to create and sustain highly effective websites for nonprofits, universities, and social good companies. Her work focuses on content creation and user experience design, helping clients communicate more effectively with their audience. Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning. Thanks, Swire. It's nice to be here.
Would you mind to give the viewer a quick bio and then some of the work that you guys do at Y Media?
Sure. So I've been doing this for a really long time. That's kind of the whole bio is running this company. I started it right out of grad school. And we, as Swire mentioned, we work with nonprofits and universities mostly. And we help them build websites that make it easier for them to communicate with their audience and that make it easier for their audience to find what they're looking for when they go to the website.
Okay. I know that one of the things that you guys do recently and be focusing on is website accessibility. Mm-hmm. Can you let us know what that is and why is it important now to a website?
Sure. So we're a user experience design firm, which means that when we design websites and think about the content that's on them and how everything is organized and laid out on the page, we're thinking about the person coming to visit the website and what they're looking for and trying to understand how they might think about the content on the site and how they might naturally want to move through it. And then design and create content to meet those expectations. And so web accessibility has to do with cases where people have disabilities of some kind that make it difficult to navigate a website. So there's, I think it's 57 million Americans, which is about almost 19% of the country, have some form of disability. So they might have difficulty grasping something, which could make it hard to use a mouse or a keyboard. There's a lot of people with vision impairments of different kinds, and so maybe they're using a screen reader that reads out the text of a page to them. And so part of our practice at the core of it is just embedding in best practices for accessibility to make sure that the website is accessible to everybody.
Can you give us an example, like how would you advise a client to make their website more accessible?
Yeah, so there are there's a criteria that's created by it's a group called the I can't remember what the acronym stands for right now, but WCAG has a standard. It maintains like general accessibility standards, and it's a very long list of things to do. But at the same time, there are certain things that almost anyone can do pretty easily that get you pretty far down the road. Like, for example, color contrast is a big deal for people with vision impairment. And there's free resources on the internet where you can check the contrast of the colors you're using for text on a background, for example, and make sure that it's high enough contrast for people to read it. And another one is font size. So just having font sizes big enough for people that, you know, maybe don't see so great anymore. And then a third one, I guess, is if you're building a website, make sure that the developers working on it understand what best practices are just for basic HTML structure. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way too.
Yeah. So since you touched on that, let's talk about the best practice for, especially for a small business. Obviously, if you're a small business, you might not have the big budget, right, that a large company might do. And, you know, want to get your take too. Obviously, user experience is very important. We also, obviously, we need to worry about our content creation. And can you also touch on SEO and how you can tie it all in together to make it accessible, looking nice, and then function correctly for a business?
Well, it's not super easy. But it's possible. Yeah. So for small business websites, I would say those tend to be more brochure websites where you're coming to just understand what the company does, with exceptions in cases of restaurants or somebody where you're actually ordering things online. A first best practice, I would say, when planning what content to have on your site is try to get out of your own head and your own way of talking about what you do and try to really understand how your customers think of you and what they say about you. The nice things, not the other things. and then reflect that on your website, you know. And in terms of accessibility, it's important to understand that your website will never be 100% accessible. It's not really possible. There's so many details and there's so many alternatives that it's possible to make the site accessible for a person with a certain kind of disability, and in doing so, make it harder to access for people with other scenarios going on. So accessibility isn't about achieving like an A+. It's more about establishing a consistent practice to try to make it as accessible as you can. One thing, you know, if you have videos on your site, you want to make sure you have closed captions on the videos and or a transcript available. So, and that's for people that can't hear well, they might rely on that.
Right now it's easier with YouTube and Facebook. You know, if you mute the audio, you actually, you know, get out the transcript by itself. So it's, you know, technology comes a long way.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. And I think a lot of the video services now make it pretty easy to have closed captions or transcripts too.
Yeah. And it's pretty inexpensive too, because like for this podcast, for example, sometimes I get the transcript from the podcast. All I think it's like 25 cents a minute. So it's very inexpensive. And then not to mention that it creates, you know, the SEO that we're looking for, because we are now speaking about the keywords that we're using.
So. Oh yeah. And you'd asked me about that too. So with the content, so I mentioned earlier, trying to make sure that the HTML structure is built correctly. And some of what that means is the code used in the HTML needs to be organized in a certain way so that when you create a headline for a page, it's in what's called an H1 tag, let's say, and the web browsers know that that means that that's important content for that page. And then there's a hierarchy of code for that. And so when your page is set up right and is tagged correctly like that, and then if you're writing a headline that uses keywords because you've done some SEO keyword research and you know what good keywords are for your business, then you're putting them in the right place in the code, and that helps the little SEO robots that come crawl your site find the right content and understand that it's relevant and important.
I think it's kind of always challenging to balance, you know, as a small business owner, myself included, I want to have all the information on the website. But then as a user, when I talk to a designer, obviously they advise me that, you know, you don't want to put that much words on the website. No one's going to read it besides you, right? So I think, you know, like you mentioned, we got to think about the people, the visitor who are coming onto a website. Do they care and want to read about those information? You know, they're not you. They don't need to know as much as you do. You know, they need to have an idea of what the service or products that you have. But then if they want to read more, you know, maybe you have it available as a Word document. You know, they could read all the text, all the technical details on it. So is it always challenging to balance the design and, you know, how much information the client wants to put onto their website?
Yes, that is a very common problem. And you stated it very well. The business owner wants to tell everything, and the people coming to the site usually have an agenda that is not, and it's not to learn everything about you. So I think of it as layering content, where if someone were to come to your site for 30 or 60 seconds and spend that much time on it, if they're skimming through your pages, which is how most people read, and I put that in quotes these days, what are they going to get? You know, are they going to get the main thing that you want them to know about you? And then if that's enough to keep their interest so that they stay on your site longer, then are there pathways for them to click into more content and more content? And so I like to think of it as layering, where if they don't click anything, they at least get a good first impression. And then if they click the next level, they get a little more detail on a specific topic that interests them. And then you could have even a third level where they click into even a longer page. And another challenge is there's a tension between a good user experience and what some of the SEO experts want. So often I'll see SEO teams want you to put a lot of words on your page because it's good for SEO, but you know, people don't want to read it. And so one solution that I've seen that works pretty well is at the top part of the page, you don't have a lot of words. You have it more skimmable content, headlines, bullet points, images. And then as you scroll down the page is where you start adding all the extra SEO text. Because not everyone's going to scroll down there. Like if they do, then they are more interested probably in reading more. So.
And I think the design of the website, the flow, you know, as you call it, you know, is important too. Because if, let's say I want to click to see a tennis shoes, for example, at the first picture, I expect to see a tennis shoes. I don't want to see words. So maybe I want to see words, you know, down below, like you said, but then when I click on something, I want to see that thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So wanted to ask you the approach because, you know, as a small business, sometimes we use a DIY approach. We do it ourselves, right? Yep. There are software obviously can be done inexpensively. And also versus hire a designer, which will be like a freelance designer that can help build a website. And obviously to hire a design firm, which will help you to develop the strategy, you know, to create the custom graphics and put it all together for you. Can you touch on each one and let us know how we should consider it for our websites?
Yeah. So we always tell our clients, let's start small. Let's not try to do everything at once. And so when you're trying to figure out, you know, should I do it myself? Should I hire a freelancer or a designer? Or should I go for like the agency treatment? Try to really think about what is the most important thing that you need the website to do for you right now? And, you know, and then think about the investment of time or money you're going to make on the DIY to agency spectrum. And is that, does that make sense to you? You know, if you're going to hire a freelancer instead of doing it yourself, is the fact that you're saving that time for yourself to do something potentially more valuable, is that worth what you're paying them, you know? And it may be, right? They may have expertise in web design that you as the business owner don't and can be more efficient. And then meanwhile, you can go do something else. That being said, not everyone can do that. And sometimes it does make sense to just do it yourself. And especially if you have if you just need a very simple, as I called it before, like brochure style website where there's no fancy interactivity. Maybe you're not selling anything necessarily. There's companies like Squarespace and Wix, W-I-X, that you can make your own website really easily. And it's, I don't know, $20, $40 a month or something like that. They have a drag and drop interface. You can choose from a bunch of really nicely designed templates and sort of customize them with colors and font changes and different photos. So, you know, those are good DIY solutions. Some people want to get really into it and build their own WordPress or say Shopify site and that's possible, but then that requires some certain level of technical ability with those platforms. And then for the agency side, I would say that is, you know, what you mentioned earlier, Swire, when you're really wanting someone with website and content strategy experience who can help you really connect what you're doing with your audience, understand what your customers are doing when they come to the site, what they want, identifying all those sort of strategic goals and then embedding that into the content creation and the site design, tying in SEO, getting your Google Analytics working so you can track some user behavior, you know, and just getting a lot more of it done for you as well.
Yeah, the follow-up question I have for that is, and thank you for, you know, explaining to everyone, how much of a website should we do? Like, let's say, you know, we spy on our competitor, right? We look at their website, we see what they have is nice that we want to have, you know, what they have that we don't like. Would you recommend to have a better website than your competition or to be in line with everyone? Like, how would you advise someone, you know, who are starting to build a website and then help them research for the market? Do you always say you should have the best website, or how would you advise them?
Well, first I would say, let's define what the best website means, right? And in my mind, what that means is it's a website that serves the needs of the people using it, which is your customers. So if you're doing that very well, it doesn't almost matter what the word opponent is coming to mind, what your competition is doing. It is worth looking at your competitor websites, though, because you want to also stand out from them. You don't want them all to look the same, you know. So if you're selling hamburgers and you look at all the other restaurants selling hamburgers and you all are using the same color palette and, you know, the same kind of photos of big juicy burgers on plates or whatever, it makes it hard for people to really see a difference or experience a difference. So that differentiation is important, and knowing, you know, what other people are doing. And you may find that competitor sites do have features that seem like they'd be great for your audience, and sure, copy that. Why not? You know, don't reinvent the wheel if there's something that's really working well. But don't copy it so much that you look like.
So what would be a cost for building a website? Because we touch on a lot of things there. So obviously it depends on what you need. Are there a general sense that you advise, and, you know, for building a, you know, good functional website for small business?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, there are, the range is huge, you know, $5,000 to $300,000, let's say, or more if you're getting into university websites and things like that. For a small business, I would think it's more, it's certainly not $300,000. It's maybe like 60 and down, something like that, depending on the size of the business and what kind of business it is. If you have sales processes or workflows that people need to do on your website that's part of your business, that adds complexity versus the brochure site I talked about before, which are usually like 10-page websites that just explain what the company does and provide a way to contact them. So whenever you're adding, like if you have Shopify, if you're selling products, you're adding a lot of complexity. You know, people need to be able to find the right product, maybe choose from different colors or sizes, and all of that has to be programmed and planned. And so when you're, any increase in complexity is going to have an increase in price, basically. So again, I would go back to saying, you know, what is the main thing you need your site to do for you right now, and what is worthwhile for you to invest in making that happen? And then the best site you can with that investment. And again, start small. You know, don't try to build a website that has everything and does everything all at once. Start with like the core essential stuff. See how it goes. See how people use it. Maybe 6 months later, 3 months later, take another pass at it and enhance it a little bit. Because often if you try to build a site that just does everything for everyone, you've gone overboard, and, you know, you'll find that some of the things that you built, nobody cares about or wants. And then now you've just spent all that money for nothing.
Yeah, sometimes it's challenging too, because obviously you will look at what your competitions are doing. Like, you know, you mentioned the example, but then, like you said, and it's true, you know, some businesses might not need a full-blown website to start. You know, I think you start a business is to start, right? You know, maybe you're adding features and your products afterwards. So so with your help, then you could probably help them to plan on maybe in 6 months, a year, or 5 years, right? These are the potential categories that you can ask, or maybe you can add blogs, or you can add a shopping cart, or whatever that it is that you know, works for them. So to start, it might just be a simple, you know, brochures, maybe to contact us, then you could get it up and running. Not to mention that, you know, you could use social media to help you. Maybe all your pictures can be on Instagram or Pinterest, or send them on a Facebook group, that already have the interface that you don't need to have it all on your website. So would it be a strategy that you would suggest them to do to incorporate the website and social media?
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of part of what I said before about starting small and starting with the essentials, you know. Certainly if financially it might make a lot of sense to leverage, you know, like a Facebook group instead of trying to get people to communicate on your website, you know, things like that. And then you can use social media to send people to your website. I think it is important to have one that looks professional. Often that's the first experience people will have with your business as they go to your website to just kind of check you out, see if it feels okay to them, you know, see what it looks like. So just having something that looks like it was planned and thoughtful and professional is good. And then if you're pairing it with social media, making sure that, you know, everything is sort of aligned in the look and feel so that it's it feels consistent to the customers. You know what I mean? Like keeping your brand identity consistent, all the fonts and colors and logos and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's when a good designer and design firm like you will come in handy, because a lot of people, they will do their website and they will do other things. And then when they go on social media and when they do promotional product with us, they go with a completely different color scheme
that
it is on the branding. And it kind of drives you, you know, crazy sometimes. You try to explain this to them, but then there were no plan for design or branding guy in place. So it's all over the place. So
yeah,
they might appear to be something different on Facebook, right? When you go to Instagram, it's different. And then they go to your website, it's all different. Mm-hmm. So how would you advise people, like how would you design it so then when they go to do their social media, then you know that they are within the design area that, you know, they should be in?
Yeah, so every company should have some sort of standards for what their visual look and feel is. And sometimes it's very simple. It's like, here's our three main colors and here's the font that we use everywhere. Sometimes it's a detailed book that has all kinds of scenarios and examples of what kind styles of photos to use. More intense ones, we'll get into content as well and talk about text, like tone of voice and messaging points to hit on. And the thing about consistency is that, again, it goes to the expectations of the person, of your customer that you're trying to attract. So if they see something on Instagram that looks a certain way and they click it, and it goes to your website, and now everything looks completely different. They're confused. They're maybe frustrated. They're maybe annoyed, you know. And these are not emotions that you want people to have in association with your company or your brand. You want them to click it and then think, oh, satisfaction. That's what I wanted. Or excitement. Oh, this is better than I thought, you know. And so keeping visual consistency helps sort of manage the expectations that, yes, I did the right action, I clicked the right thing, I've ended up where I thought I was going to go. And then, you know, that takes away the negative feelings that can happen when something just is confusing or not living up to the expectation.
I want to ask you this question, since I know you're a professional working on this for a long time. I've talked to small business owner. They have business, right? They're not struggling and want more business, but their website was designed, you can tell with the look of the website, it's done many years ago. Mm-hmm. So when would you suggest a company to redesign or tune up their website? You know, because I'm getting business, I'm fine with what we have. So why do we need to update our website?
Sure. This is one of my favorite questions. So I am an advocate for never do a redesign again. And because the best way to manage a website is like it's a garden that you're growing, where you tend it on a regular basis. You're looking at it every month or every quarter. You're understanding what people are doing on it. And you're making small incremental changes as you go along in response to that. Also in response to technology changes. So, you know, upgrading the technology on a regular basis and things like that kind of helps your site evolve over time and not get stale or old looking. that doesn't solve the problem of sites that are that way now. So if your site is that way now, if you're happy with it and your business is doing fine and you don't want to spend money on it, okay. Eventually your site is going to break and not work anymore if you don't do at least minimal technical maintenance on it. So at some point you're going to need to update it. If you really don't want to, I don't know how to say that you should, but, if you're going to, then it's worth thinking about again, like, how do you want to approach it? The DIY, the freelancer, the firm, what do you want to invest in it? You know, if it's old, but your business is doing fine, you maybe just want to give it a little polish so that it looks more modern, and maybe make it easier for you to maintain it. So often in my experience, what that means is getting rid of a lot of content. Older websites will tend to have a lot heavier content on them than newer ones. And so you can simplify a lot of things by just getting rid of a lot of it if you can determine that no one's really looking at it or interested in it. And then you can go to, you know, one of the Squarespace or Wix or hire your freelancer and do, you know, a simple site.
Yeah, I love you comparing doing a website to gardening. So I could totally relate to that. Like, it's springtime now. If you don't tend your garden and pull the weeds, it's going to overgrow and you're going to, and then you got to have, you know, certain things in place, you know, so like your experience or maybe your accessibility and maybe, the right content that you have. Those are the trees, right, that you put in your garden to stop the wind. So if you neglect it, it's going to go away. But then if you do maybe certain things from time to time, maybe on the weekends and maybe whenever you have the time available, it's going to get better. It's going to be a more established garden. Exactly. It's going to be, you know, better than if you just go in one day and decided to do works on it.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, with Google Analytics, it's pretty easy to install and you can tell if no one is visiting certain pages of your site. And if not, then either redo the page or get rid of it, you know. But it gives you some data to work with, too. So you're not just guessing and you're not basing it on your personal opinion, which is a very common thing for people to do, especially business owners, right? As business owners, we're all like, we can do anything. We know everything. We can figure it out. And that's true, but also not. And, you know, so trying to get out of your own head and working with data and working with an understanding of your customers to tend the garden of your website, so to speak, is a really useful way to go about it.
Yeah, I like that. You should patent that, doing gardening on your website. So let me ask you a big question and let's tie it all in together. So where do I start? So with all the information, let's assuming, you know, we wanted to change our website and to make it better. Mm-hmm. How would you suggest, you know, the thinking process and how would they, find the expert that could fit within the criteria? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what are some of the must-have that you think for building a website in 2021?
Sure. So I guess I would say starting with your own goals, you know, how can the website change to better help your business? You know, can it attract more people? Can it help you do more sales or, you know, whatever it is? Think about that. Think about your budget. You know, what do you realistically have to invest in a new website? What are you willing to invest at a minimum? And just kind of know your range, your minimum and maximum budget that you're able to put towards this project. And then I would say look around at competitor websites and at or maybe not even competitors, but similar websites, other small business websites. And if you scroll to the very bottom, there will be a little link that's crediting the person or the company that designed it. So that might be a way to find businesses that could help you with your website. Mm. Also just ask people that other business owners, you know, hey, do you like your web people? Who are they? What do you like about them? And try to get sort of a short list of firms that feel, or if it's going to be firms, I'll talk about the DIY thing later, but if it's going to be someone you're hiring, try and get kind of a short list of people that have experience with sites like yours about the same scale as yours, that will help make sure budgets are better in alignment. You know, if you're going to like a big agency and you're a small business, there might not be a match there. The agency just might be way too expensive. You know, the freelancer might be a better option. But I think referrals are really key. Some people will put out a public request for proposal. I personally don't recommend that. You will get a lot of responses, but they will be all over the place. And then you have to read like 50 proposals, which is, nobody wants to do that. So try and get referrals for a short list of people that are aligned in the sense of budget, scale of website, and that kind of thing. And then maybe do a request for proposal where you sort of outline what your goals are, what you hope the website can do for you, and then see how they would approach solving that problem and, you know, their budget and timeline and that kind of thing. And I know people don't like to do this, but I really recommend telling them what your broad budget range is to help get that fit. Because you don't want, if you're willing to spend $15,000, you don't want a freelancer who's going to charge you $3,000 because they're just not going to do the level of work that you want, you know. Alternatively, if you want to spend $15,000 and the firm that you're asking to bid on it, you know, comes back with a $60,000 proposal, there's no point in you even reading it. And now everyone's time has been wasted on that, you know. So I think the alignment is really critical.
Okay, great.
One other good thing to do is look at all your content and figure out what you can get rid of.
Reduce it. Actually get rid of things.
If you can, yeah.
Okay. So, Marcy, if a viewer wanted to try to get in touch with you, what would be the best way? And I'll encourage everyone listening to go to Marcy's website at ymedia.net.